Welcome to another Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
More than a podcast.
Now, our Funny Women series celebrating some of the great queens of sitcom over the years continues now with a look back at a legendary show which became a mainstay of the ITV schedules in the 1970s and is still being repeated to this day. From the stable of London Weekend Television. Came on the Buses. The show had a brilliant ensemble cast who would also go on to feature in three spin-off feature films. Now, our guest became an iconic character who many still reference to this day, decades on. We are, of course, talking about the rather dippy but much-loved Olive, played by the delightful Anna Caron, who would go on, of course, to play the caustic Aunt Sal in EastEnders. I'm sure Anna might have something to say about her Albert Square days, too. Have fun.
Anna, lovely to talk to you. I grew up watching On the Buses in the 1970s. I wasn't born until 1972, but it was on throughout most of the 70s. But it actually started in the 60s, hadn't it? Is that right? Right in the late
60s? 1969, we started shooting it.
Where did it come from? Whose idea was it? Do you know?
It was Ronnie Wolfe and Ronnie Chesney who wrote The Rag Trade and... they'd written two or three different comedies, and they'd just done a thing called Wild Wild Women, which was a rag trade, but they'd taken it back to the 1920s. And they had Barbara Windsor in it and Tony Palmer, and I'd just done Carry On Camping with Barbara. And she said to me, oh, they're looking for a couple of people to do, it's only a small part, she said, that's what I did in the rag trade. So I said, would you be interested? I said, yeah. So she fixed for me to go and see the guy, and he gave it to me. And I only had one line, here comes Mr. Fenner, you know, and that sort of thing. And then while I was doing it, the two Ronnies who wrote it came in, and the one day they came in, I'd been sort of being very good, you know, I was made up and presentable, but I had flu, and I thought, oh, God, I can't bear this. And they came in, and they said, oh, you're just what we want. And I went, what? I said, we want to take you over to London Weekend. I said, well, give me a minute. I'm just going to do my hair. No. I said, we want you to go as you are, which was horrific. Anyways, I went over and met the director, and I got the job. And I did the job for 5 episodes. And then the two Ronnie said, we've got to take her. We're going to use her for On the Buses. So it literally was like that.
Fabulous. Now, when you just to stop, just so we don't confuse people, when you say the two Ronnies, you mean Ronald...
Ronnie Wolfe and Ronnie Chesney.
That's right. Otherwise, people will be listening and thinking we mean Ronnie Barker and Ronnie Corbett.
No, it's the other two Ronnies.
Fantastic. So what did you know about it? As in, you know, what were you told that it was going to be?
I was told it was going to be about a busman and his family, and that Red Ronnie was playing the busman. And they said, we want her to be very plain. So I said, yeah, that's okay. So we went out for a day and sort of looked around all the bus stations and things. And I saw this woman who looked just like Olive, the hair parted and the glasses and terrible. And I went back and said, that's how I'd like her to be. In fact, the very first episode, I had a fringe for half of it and then no fringe for the second half because they wouldn't go back and shoot again. So, you know, it just stuck. It was very lucky.
Fabulous. So you were part of the creation of Olive?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, because, you know, when you go into makeup rooms, they have their own ideas, but I had my idea from a woman I'd seen in the bus station.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And did you know at that particular point who you might be starring with?
I knew Reg was in it. I didn't know anyone else who was in it because Doris wasn't in the first series. It was Cicely Courtnage. Doris took over.
What happened then with Cicely Courtnage? What was
I haven't a clue. No? We were never told.
Really? She was just in the very first series and that was it?
Yeah.
Playing what, the same part as Doris, was she?
Yeah.
Right, okay, interesting. So you obviously, you say you knew it was about buses and yeah. It was some kind of, you know, and did you think it was going to be in the sort of style of the sort of the Carry On kind of thing? Was likely it was going to be like that or...
sort of did, because I'd been in a carry-on, and, you know, and Barbara had picked me up from there. And but I was just so excited at getting a series, I didn't really think, you know. And I was so terrified that on the first day we shot, I came out and my hands were bleeding where I'd dug my nails into my hands. I was so frightened.
Really? Really?
I was really, absolutely terrified. Because I thought, these people are all established and, you know, I've only done a couple of lines here, there and everywhere. And I really did get real stage fright. But, it in time, it sorted itself out. And Michael Robbins, who played Arthur, was terrific. He was really helpful. And then after one series, we came in for the second series. And by the second episode, they said, you're number one in the charts. And I said, what? They said, On the Buses is number one on the charts. And it was that quick. Suddenly, we were being asked to go here and there and everywhere. And it was quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we did Battersea Funfair one, I think it must be the second year, and we were on top of a bus going round, and these people crowded in front of the bus, and they said, we're not moving until Arthur kisses Olive. oh, God, come on, quick, you know. I'd never experienced anything like that, you know, so it was really quite fascinating.
You say that at the beginning you were very nervous, but in a way you can imagine Olive being quite nervous in different situations. I mean, you know, she was a... I mean, tell us a bit about her character, because she was quite interesting, wasn't she? Because she gave the impression of being, you know, a bit daft and all the rest of it. But actually, she got the better sometimes, didn't she?
Yes, I think the thing is that Olive was extremely grateful that anyone married her. And I based her on someone I knew who, whatever her husband said, went, oh, yes. And I used to think, what are you listening to him for, you know? But it really was like this person I picked on. And she always thought her husband was superior to the rest of the world. And I thought, if I constantly think that, you know, Arthur's superior to every other man in the world, I'll be able to get away with this. And then we would have rows. But the thing is, Olive loved him very much.
Yeah, and he loved her, really, didn't he?
I think he did in his own way.
Yeah.
In his own way. You know, but Michael was played a tough husband, and he was great at it.
He was indeed. So obviously, you know, the other ensemble, because you were an ensemble cast, weren't you, basically, of people.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some fantastic... let's just talk a bit about Reg Varney. I mean, he'd been around for a long time, hadn't he? Because he was quite an age at that particular point, wasn't he?
I know, and he said I was his older sister. He made the point, he said, she's my older sister. And I thought, but he was insistent.
Yeah, and he sort of... I mean, tell you a bit about that character. I mean, he was made for it, really, wasn't he? That sort of cheeky, chappy kind of role that he had with the other chap, Bob Grant, of course, who played Jack, didn't he? Tell us a bit about that sort of that relationship. I mean, the point is that the show went on for a very, very long time. So presumably, each of these characters evolved over time and went in lots of different directions, really.
Yes, they did. They did. You know, I mean, after a few episodes, it couldn't be Olive saying, oh, yes, Arthur, oh, yes, Arthur, all the time. So, you know, we had the first time I had to actually row back with him. I had to throw a tin opener at him. And he ran out of the shot. And I said, what did you do that for? He said, well, I didn't think you'd hit the right place. You know, and that sort of, all things like that developed. And then Bob Grant was very, you know, he could create almost anything, Bob. He was from Joan Littlewood's, you know, workshop. And so was Stephen Lewis. And, of course, Stephen Lewis was just fantastic, because he would have a line saying, OK, and he'd say, oh, no, 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 oh, no. And you know, we all sit there till he finished whatever he was making up. He was incredible, Stephen Lewis.
I mean, that was the other thing about it, wasn't it? That although obviously there was the stories and the conversations and things, but it was actually quite visual, wasn't it? Olive was a very visual character.
Yes.
And so was Blakey. And so was Bob's character, actually.
Yes. And funnily enough, I went up north a couple of years ago. A man came up to me and said, can I just show you something? And he makes trays of Stephen Lewis and I shaking fists at each other.
Brilliant, brilliant. That's really good. That's really good. So, yeah, as I say, just let's talk a little bit about some of the actors in it. So, Reg Varney, been around a long, long time
yes.
and done a lot of work. And so,
oh, yeah.
for you, it must have felt really good to be working with him, was it?
It did. It did. I was very much in awe of him, you know. And I remember saying, I've got a teleseries with Reg Varney. And people went, have you? And I said, yeah. You know, I was really sort of very sort of frightened of him. But Reg was okay. He was fine. And Doris was lovely. I mean, she'd been in the business forever. And she had wonderful stories of, you know, Noel Coward and people like that. And then Bob and Stephen both came from Joel Littlewood's Stratford East, where she did all her things like Lovely War and, you know, that sort of thing. Sparrows Can't Sing. And
Barbara was in Sparrows Can't Sing, wasn't she?
Yeah,
right.
Barbara played the lead in Sparrows Can't
yeah.
Sing.
Yeah.
And Barbara played in Lovely War on Broadway. So we were surrounded by that. And then, of course, as you say, Doris Hare you knew. And Michael was the only one who was much more of a straight actor. But God, he could be funny. He really was very funny.
Yeah, I mean, the casting was excellent, really, in a way. I mean, obviously they picked you very well, but had some of the other ones worked together before?
Stephen and Bob had worked together before, but no one else had.
Now, the scenarios, the different things that went on. There was a lot of, I mean, obviously Reg and Reg's character Stan and, of course, you know, Bob's character,
yeah.
Jack, were, you know, the main thing was they were always after the ladies, really. And they were always
That's
after,
right.
they didn't
yeah.
want to work, basically, and just wanted to, you know, get off with the girls, really. That was the main thrust of it, wasn't it, really?
Yes.
But it led to lots of hilarious, you know, things happening and you know, so today, and they probably criticise it as being outrageously sexist and all this kind of stuff. But the guys always got their comeuppance, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And funnily enough, we went to Canada with it many years later, and someone said, "This is sexist," and we said, "Well, no, not really." You know, they said, "Well, we thought it would be," and they were quite surprised that we did a proper farce of people who'd arrived in Canada and they'd lost their money and now they were illegal immigrants and all that rubbish, you know, and getting out of hotels and things like that. Again, written by the two Ronnies, we went to Vancouver one year and the following year we went back to Toronto.
And it was successful all around the world, wasn't it? In different
oh,
places.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, the other night, I was switching my telly on and it's got a funny twist sometimes and I switched it on and I thought, that's on the buses. So I rang my agent to tell him. I said, "On the bus is on again. Can you check for repeats?" And he said, "Where did you?" I said, "I can't tell you what channel it was on. I was on something else, and it switched, and there it was." And it was a scene where Reg had got engaged to this little Clippy, who was terribly posh, and who was Stephen Lewis's niece. And it was so strange to watch it again. It really was.
Yeah.
Terrible clothes Olive wore. Terrible clothes, all brown or beige, all the colours. Because I'd say, don't give me a colour that suits me. Don't give me blue or red or anything like that. You know, keep it neutral.
But I think everyone knew an Olive, to be honest. I think if you remember rightly, growing up in the 70s, I remember sort of friends of my mum's who were a bit like Olive. Do you know what I mean?
There's
plenty of Olives out there, I think, to be honest.
Oh, yes. And there's plenty of men who'll come out and say, "Have a look at my Olive."
Yeah, exactly.
But the greatest thing that happened that really made me laugh is I was up in Rill getting ready for pantomime and I was walking along the beach and a man shouted, "Oi, Olive!" And I turned around and he went, you're Babs's sister now, aren't you?" I'd just gone into East Simms. I said, "Yeah." He said, "Won't make any difference. Olive once, Olive forever." And I thought, oh, well, okay.
Yes, I remember being in an office, actually, about 15, 20 years ago, and we were in this just having a meeting, and I was a management person. It was in radio, and we were all sat in this office, and a lady came past, and everybody who was from a certain generation just looked at her, and we all looked at each other and went, "It's Olive."
I know. There are a lot of them about, aren't there?
There are, yeah. It's bizarre, isn't it? So you did very well there on that, on the creation of Olive. Now, of course, the other thing about Stan and his friend was, of course, they were always getting found out by Blakey, weren't they? That was the thing. That was the running joke. And it was fantastic. And he was, just talk a bit more about Stephen Lewis. He played that part extremely well, because of course he was very different in real life, wasn't he? But yes, it was sort of it was a cartoon-esque character in a way, but again, I think we've all known people in work situations who have got that sort of attitude about them, haven't we? Who sort of on the lookout for wrongdoing and sort of nosing in everyone's business kind of thing, and so he got that quite right, didn't he? I think
yes. I think so.
What was this relationship like, do you think, in the programme with Olive? Because occasionally they came up against each other, didn't they?
Sort of slight indifference from both parties, I think. You know, we knew each other, obviously. But I think all the men thought Olive was very stupid. She was a butt of jokes, and I really didn't mind it.
Of course, she wasn't very good at cooking, was she, Olive?
No, she wasn't very good at cooking, and nor am I. I'd much rather heat something up than cook it.
Now, of course, there was loads of fantastic scenarios that you went through over the time. And I think it was 71 episodes of On the Buses or something. And of course,
I don't know.
74 episodes there were, 74.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 74 episodes.
And I remember the one where I played football.
Oh, yeah.
That one, because I ended up running up and down the football pitch forever in high-heeled shoes and striped socks. I remember that one. That sort of stuck in my head because I saw it again years afterwards and thought, oh, my God, I never did that. And, of course, when we did the films, my husband had been a stuntman, and he just came in and said to the stuntman, don't let her do anything because she's an idiot. And I thought, oh, great, now you're going to... And he said, no, she hasn't got any coordination. And the lovely stuntman texts, he treated me like I was made of gold. No, you can't do that. Yes, you can do this. You lean this way and I'll make sure you're all right. He was great. Thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Again, those films were great, weren't they? I mean, the thing I liked about them as a little boy was the fact that, because I was into my buses and trains and things like that, and it was a great opportunity to see these red Route Master buses on film. It was brilliant. But answer me one question. Why were the buses in the films red, but the buses on the TV series green? I could never get that.
The buses for the series were green because that was the bus depot they used and that they had the deal. But when we did the films, they needed backing from someone else, and Fred Ponting gave them the backing. So we had to have their buses.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you spend all of your waking moments watching reality TV? Well, you're in good company. I'm Will.
And I'm Marissa. And we're the hosts of Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails, a new weekly podcast that covers the ever-so-entertaining and cringy world of reality television.
Each week, we'll be raising our glasses and diving into the latest drama and chaos from our favorite reality TV shows.
From 90 Day Fiancé to The Bachelor, we've got all your reality favorites covered.
So grab a drink and join us as we clink our glasses to the hilarious and delightful train wrecks of reality TV.
Subscribe now to Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails on your favorite podcast platform.
Right, I get you. I understand. Yeah. And of course, the films, of course, were out on location, outside, whereas actually the TV series was mainly done inside, wasn't it?
Almost always. The most you do is one day's filming for, you know, a 10-day shoot or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
It was mainly the men who did the outside work.
I mean, we've just realized, we just found out there were 74 episodes, which is a lot. Did you remember the series of, you know, the series has been quite long stints in terms of putting them together and everything? Was it a long...
No, we did it all, one episode per week.
Really? Okay, okay.
Yeah. One episode per week. We started on a Monday or whatever it was, and we did 5 days rehearsal, then we did one day's technical, and then we did the show. We did it in front of a live audience.
Yeah, and I was going to ask about that. I mean, what was that like? Because obviously you enjoyed that, yeah?
I think it's horrible that I do it without them now. Because when you've got an audience there, you know what's happening because you're getting a feedback. And so you get a good sort of ride. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You think, oh, this is going good. Bang, I can do that. Whereas when you work, you know, without an audience, it's my generation, of course. It's sort of like, I don't know, it's something's lacking.
And Ashley's chat with Anna Karen, who played Olive in On the Buses, continues after a look at what else is in store on Distinct Nostalgia in the coming weeks and months.
Distinct Nostalgia is home to some of the great women of British sitcom. We've got interviews with Felicity Kendall from The Good Life and Wendy Craig from Butterflies. There's Linda Robson and Leslie Joseph from Birds of a Feather. Plus Matilda Thorpe, who starred in The Desmonds, and Sherry Hewson and Amanda Barry recalling their Carry On days. And now three more queens of sitcom are joining us over the summer. Sally Tomsett relives her Man About the House days.
She was very good at burning toast, if I remember.
Yeah, that's true life. I can't cook to save my life.
While Anna Karen tells us how she created Olive in On the Buses.
They said we want her to be very plain. So we went out for a day and sort of looked around all the bus stations and things. And I saw this woman who looked just like Olive, the hair parted and the glasses and terrible. And I went back and said, that's how I'd like her to be. In fact, the very first episode, I had a fringe for half of it and then no fringe for the second half because they wouldn't go back and shoot again. So, you know, it just stuck.
So you were part of the creation of Olive?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Plus, Judy Cornwell, who was Hyacinth's sister Daisy in Keeping Up Appearances, also pops in for a chat.
It was very funny. On the very first day in the studio, our first scene, Onslow and Daisy, was in bed. So we climbed into the bed, lay down and pretended we were asleep, and then the whole bed collapsed and our legs went in the air. And the audience were just uncontrollable. They were falling about.
The women of Great British Sitcom. Available this summer on Distinct Nostalgia.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Listen out for new episodes and scroll through our archives for past programmes wherever you get your podcasts.
It went head-to-head with Blue Peter for the affections of kids in the 70s.
It was a magazine. So you open a magazine, you have lots of different things in the magazine, and we always did four or five. And a pie is a sort of surprise, and you never know what's going to be in it.
Magpie was perceived as being a little bit more risque, and at its height was pulling in 7 million viewers in its 10 to 5 after-school slot on ITV. Just what was Magpie's magic?
Yeah, it wasn't difficult to be more hip than Blue Peter. Blue Peter was a conservative show, so there certainly was an attempt to get some of the Blue Peter audience, but it was meant to be just a bit more interesting and a bit more lively.
We've brought back three of the show's presenters for a special reunion on Distinct Nostalgia.
We were more like the kids, you know, because we were younger, but there was also a feeling of us being a bit more radical, just a bit more in tune with the people that, you know, watched us. We had 7 million people watching twice a week.
That's Douglas Ray, Mick Robertson and Susan Stranks, back soon for a special Magpie reunion, only on Distinct Nostalgia.
More than a podcast.
Go to distinctnostalgia.com or search wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the things that carried on, of course, in the house was obviously between you and your husband, you know, Michael's character, around your relationship and whether or not you were having sex and or not, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that became a regular sort of thing, didn't it? And sort of Olive, I think, wanted kids at one point and all that kind of thing. You had all that sort of going on. Yes. Just tell us a bit about that, because there were some funny, hilarious scenes, weren't there, around that?
She was obviously ready for sex at any time at all. But he didn't know. Apparently he'd had an operation. If I mentioned that, he went potty about it. But we did, when we got the film, we put in a child. I gave birth to a child.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had this little baby. I mean, he's now 6'2" and a pilot. But then he was a little boy. And every time I spoke, he cried. Every time. If I had a funny line, you had no chance of hearing it because he'd cry. And that put me right off. And people would say things like, "Don't you want one now?" No.
That's funny. And I remember some of the bedroom scenes, you know, the bits in the bedroom, whatever. That was hilarious. It really was.
I mean,
it's classic. We've seen it in other sitcoms. I know whereby. Yeah. I mean, I think George Mildred was very much based around the fact that George was never interested in sex and Mildred was, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. But it is really funny. Do you think that? Do you think Olive was happy?
Yes, I think she was quite. I mean, she was married. She loved her husband. He didn't leave her till the very last episode. So I think she was, to a certain extent. I don't think she knew any better.
No.
You know, I mean, I think there are plenty of women. And I remember a woman who said to me once when I said something about, she said, "I've never known what my husband earned." And I said, "Really?" And so she said, "Yes, I don't think it's right for a woman to know what her husband earns." And I was amazed because I thought everybody knew what their husband earned.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, and this was a woman who had two children and was happily married, and she still did not know how much he earned.
Yeah, I think that was common in certain areas. I agree. I think it was. And the other thing, of course, with Olive is that she had great difficulty when it came to work, didn't she? Occasionally, she'd do things. I think she went and worked at the bus depot several times, didn't she? Different capacities.
Yes, quite a few times.
Did she? Yes. She was a clippy a few times, wasn't she? Is that right?
She was a clippy a few times. She was a chef once. That was disastrous. She looked after the nursery when they were looking for a nursery nurse. That lasted one episode. Yes, she at odd intervals she would go in if there was a job going and, you know, do it.
And often, as you say, creating some kind of disaster. Remind us of that episode when she went in to do the cooking.
Oh, my God. I burnt the saucepan right through. It was sticking on the stove. And when Reg picked it up, first of all, it was boiling hot, so he burnt his hand. But then when you saw it, it was all, you know, a big black hole.
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming back to me now. It was a really, really good episode. Then wasn't there another one which I remember is quite really, really funny, which was when you'd didn't several of the members of the house go down with flu or something? Do you remember that one? There was one where everyone was ill, and
I wasn't ill,
and you weren't ill, no, but the others were ill. I think I can't remember exactly, but
so what did I do? Was I cooking for them?
I think you were looking. You were trying to look after them. Yes, I think. I think that was what it was. Yeah.
You know, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, something along those lines. I think I remember rightly.
She couldn't do anything, darling. Olive couldn't do anything really. She couldn't do anything well.
No.
She was one of those people who couldn't do anything well. She couldn't. Hadn't been found out yet.
Now there was a period, wasn't there, where. I don't know whether it was to do with the strikes or whatever, but there was a period when all the episodes were in black and white.
That was the beginning.
That was right at the beginning, was it?
Right, okay. Beginning, and then our second series, we went into colour.
Right, okay.
And that was really, in those days, I mean, it was really, you had to be so careful because you couldn't wear this colour and you couldn't wear that colour. And, you know, that's when Olive became brown or beige.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Are you a baseball fan? Do you watch movies, TV, or are you curious about the lives of professional baseball players or people in the entertainment industry? Then Peanuts, Popcorn, and Cracker Jacks is the podcast for you. Hosted by Jeff Santo, a writer-director and son of a Hall of Fame Chicago Cubs baseball player, This podcast comes out every other Thursday with extraordinary guest interviews and surprise Cracker Jack guests. It's fun, it's emotional. It's Peanuts, Popcorn, and Cracker Jacks.
Yeah, it was, I know it was a difficult period. I also know, I remember it being a very big thing, because whenever you put the TV on, it says blah, 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 in colour. It was a big thing to be in colour,
yes,
wasn't it, at that particular particular time?
Yes, now, wasn't it?
Now, it was obviously hugely successful, as you say. You were, like, number one in the charts and all the rest of it. What impact did that have on you and your life at that time?
Not a lot, really. I mean, I became recognisable, and I did have people shouting in the street, which you just sort of have to learn to take. You know, at the beginning, I was a bit shy about it. But then you reach a stage where you get past that stage. And I, one morning at 5 o'clock in the morning, the doorbell rang. And I went downstairs with a milkman's son who said, "My dad said if I woke you up now, you'd give me an autograph." And you couldn't swear at him, you know.
Yeah.
5 o'clock in the morning.
Crazy, crazy, isn't it? Crazy, no. Crazy, crazy.
And then, you know, you could walk into a ladies' room at somewhere and someone would say, "A state of her." And you think, hold on a minute, you've just been working on the set with me. But still the state of her, you know. Women were not stuck on Olive. They thought she was a lazy cow.
Oh, really? Mm. Well, you were playing it real, really. You were depicting people who are out there, weren't you? That's the point.
Yeah.
And that's obviously what they didn't like in different ways. I mean, do you think, at the time, obviously, there wasn't a massive amount on TV and viewing figures were huge generally. Do you think that that other programmes, other comedies learnt from On the Buses? Because you were going on for a long, long time, went on for many, many, many years, and other comedies, you know, come and go and all the rest of it. But do you think quite a few of them learnt from that ensemble cast? Because it worked very well for a long time, didn't it?
I think so. I think they did, because up till then they'd had things that were about a husband and wife, you know, where there were just two people and perhaps a neighbour. But suddenly you started finding more in the cast. I mean, we were just lucky. We had six, and someone said, "That's a perfect number." Because you can have a lot to do one week and you needn't do too much the next week, and, you know, and things like that. And all our characters were complete contrast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But as you say, you could have little undercurrents of stories going along while the main story was going along, couldn't you?
And yes, you could.
And having the story that was going on in the house could be completely different to what the lads were getting up to on the buses, couldn't it? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And also, it gave you, you know, two places where things happened, and Reg was really the only one who was in both places at the same time.
Yeah, Bob's character would occasionally pop up, wouldn't he, at the house and that kind of thing. He'd pop in to have some food cooked by Olive. So tell us a little bit more about Doris Hare, because she'd been around a long, long time, and she was a really lovely lady. And I remember watching her on her edition of This Is Your Life, and you didn't realise, you know, how far back she went. I mean, you know, tell us a little bit about her and what kind of person she was.
Well, I mean, she'd worked with Noel Coward. She'd worked with all the greats. She'd been a Cochrane girl when she started. And she started in a family that toured the country in a wagon. In the days when you had a family in a wagon and they'd get to a village and do a show. And that's what her parents did. And she and her sisters grew up like that. And then she got very successful. She did a talk on her life story one day when we were in Canada. And it was fascinating because, you know, to think of travelling through Ireland in that cold weather and getting out and doing a show was absolutely incredible. And then to meet Noel Coward, who wrote a song for her about a girl who was born in a little house in Ealing but had married very well. And she used to say, "Oh, yes, I remember it well." You know, and a great, great character she got in it. And she was very kind, because when she finished, she said, "You can have that if you need it," she said, "because you could do it." And I said, "Oh, thank you." And the only times I've used it is if I've been on a cruise where I've had to do a song and I can't sing, so I'd do that. But, I mean, and she'd worked with everyone. with absolutely everyone. And she also had a very strong strength in her, because she would say, if you were in the dressing room having a moan, she'd say, you know what you need? And you'd say, what? She'd say, a few weeks out of work. And you think, oh dear, you know. But she was a lovely lady. Great singer.
Yeah. Could Olive sing?
No. No, she couldn't. But Doris was the sweetheart of the Navy during the Second World War.
Right, yeah.
And when we got to Canada, I always remember we were just going on, and she said, you better love your mum. And I said, well, I do love you. She said, you better show you love me, because there's a lot of the people. And she came on to this enormous applause. I'm sure the whole of the Canadian Navy was in there. I mean, phenomenal applause.
I can imagine. So, and as you say about the way she, you know, where she toured around as a youngster. I mean, that was a great sort of training ground, wasn't it?
To get from there to actually get into the West End, and through the Cochrane Girls, and then Noel Coward discovering her and things like that. And I remember when he came over to England for some sort of anniversary, and she met him that night. And she came in the next day, and she really looked the worse for wear. And she said it was just so lovely seeing him again. They'd obviously had a good piss up, and, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were quite young, weren't you, when you were on the buses? I mean, you were very young, and she was getting on a bit, wasn't she, if I remember rightly?
Yes, yes.
But you were the two main women in the series. So do you think you learned quite a lot from working with Doris?
Oh, you could learn so much from working with Doris, because she knew it all. You know, she knew that if you took a pause now, you'd get a better laugh, and if you turned your head this way, it would, you know. She really did know about it, and she would be quite helpful about it.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's interesting to know about Doris, because she's one of those greats who has been forgotten about a little bit, to be honest, because she was a really, really big star, in the day. And it's sort of, you know, there's some of these people that I think should be celebrated a bit more. I always think that Peggy Mount is forgotten about a bit, to be honest, because I think she was
Peggy
fantastic,
Mount was
wasn't
wonderful.
She? Yeah.
I played Peggy Mount's part in two different theatre shows. I did the first one and the second one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I met her, and I said to her, can you give me some advice? She said, yes, she loves her children.
And right.
I said, thank you. You know, and that was all I needed, really.
Yeah. Fabulous. So did, On the Buses went on for a long time, went on from 69 through into the sort of the mid-70s, and then, of course, there was the films. And, you know, it was a really, really successful series. And I suppose, in a way, all those characters became certainly your character and Stephen Lewis's character and Bob's character all became sort of iconic. And it's interesting what you said about the fact that they've got these little models of you all kind of thing. It's quite interesting. So it all became iconic. Did it sort of then sort of change your life in a way that it sort of ended up typecasting you a bit? I mean, you're bound to be typecasted by Olive, aren't you, really?
I got a bit of typecasting. I mean, I got typecast as someone who would play a funny woman or a mouthy woman. But no, it didn't damage me in any way. I mean, I just got picked for comedy, which is fine with me.
Why did it end in the end?
Reg didn't want to do any more.
You just had enough at that particular point?
Yes.
But it constantly gets repeated. And, of course, it was remade by the Americans, wasn't it? They did their own version of it,
yes,
I gather.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I've never seen that. What was it like? Do you know?
I've never seen it.
No.
I do know it wasn't a success.
No, they often aren't, are they?
No, I know.
They're not.
Because it's not their humour.
No.
You know.
No, they can't replicate it, can they, in America, really?
No, they can't.
In fact, to be honest, it's not really the equivalent of buses anyway. I mean, they do have buses, but not in the same kind of way, do they, really, in America?
No, but the man who played Reg was quite a big star, Dom somebody other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You'd have to look it up.
But yeah, I'm going to look it up. Let me look it up and see who it was. Lots of Luck, it was called. And it starred Dom DeLuise? Dom DeLuise was in a lot of films with Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder
like that.
Yeah. That's where it... But it didn't... the sitcom ran for only one series, 22 episodes in 73-74. It was not a success and has never been screened in Britain. So there you are. What was it like working at London Weekend? Because at that particular time, London Weekend was where all the big shows, obviously there was Thames as well, but in terms of ITV, London Weekend was where some of the big entertainment shows were being made, wasn't it?
Yes, well, there was Please Sir with John Alderton and all the kids in the school. They all did well. I can't remember because they sort of brought us in at different times. Do you know what I mean? You'd come in as someone else was leaving and you'd leave when someone else was coming in. But they did the Doctor series. They did Stanley Baxter shows.
For children, they did things like Cat Weasel. And then you had things like in comedy, you had obviously On the Buses, Honestly, Please Sir, Mind Your Language, of course, was done by London Weekend as well. It'll Be All Right on the Night started there, of course.
That's right, yes, yeah. Dennis Norden.
Yeah, that's right. Clive James on television, Game for a Laugh in later years. But it was a hotbed of creativity, wasn't it? And you had things, big dramas as well that were done there, and you know,
it was a lovely studio.
Yeah, yeah. I think Upstairs Downstairs was done by London Weekend as well.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, presumably it was a lovely place to work, a very creative place.
It was a great place to work. It was good studios, very good studios, a good canteen, which is very important if you're there all day.
Yeah.
And you know, if you weren't feeling in the mood for talking to your co-stars, you'd sit at another table and, you know, someone else would come and join you, you know, things like that. And we were working with a group who did impressions. Freddie Starr was on it.
Oh, yes, yes.
And, you know, I used to have breakfast with Freddie Starr in the morning because he'd say, you don't want to talk to him on this morning, do you? And I said, no. He said, all right, come sit here. He was lovely.
Yeah, nice guy. Sadly, you know, in latter years, he had a dreadful time, didn't he? Bless him. You know, it's awful, really, to think about what happened to Freddie Starr in a way. So when you think back on this period then, I mean, you know, it must be quite magical, really, when you think back at what you got up to back in the 70s.
Well, I do think it was magical because it sort of changed my life.
Yes.
You know, because I became recognisable, I was invited to things. Terry Duggan, my poor husband, was out working his butt off because he was a stand-up comic, to buy me different evening dresses, you know. But he appeared in a few of the buses too. And there were dogs. There was a beautiful Great Dane dog who was in it twice or three times. That was mine. And the real story was that when his money came in, he was earning more than me.
Oh, really?
Mm.
There you go.
I said to the director, my dog is earning more than I am.
Everyone thinks that our industry is full of millionaires and all the rest of it, and it's actually full of a lot of very hard workers, isn't it, basically, at the end of the day?
It is.
You know.
And I feel very sad for people now with the fact that no one's putting on anything. They have no idea how much money the theatre brings into this country.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM, and if you like what we do, then please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every penny helps us to make even more amazing content just for you. Go to distinctnostalgia.com and click on the donate button. Thank you.
Do you want a cup of tea? I'll have half a cup. And that caught on. Yeah, that became a kind of catchphrase, I think.
It was the hilarious film of 1999.
Wasn't anything to do with race or religion or creed or colour. It was as simple as an art student who thinks he's all free and easy creating a model of a vagina and showing it to his mum and thinking that that's going to be okay.
East is East by Ayub Khan Din broke new ground by portraying a relationship between a British woman and her Asian husband and their mixed-race family growing up in Salford in the early 1970s. A clash of cultures and generations ensues.
Oh, frig off and wash your bastard curtains, you dirty cow. And I swear to God, that's one of the best lines I've ever had to say in my life.
But the film had a serious side too, tackling both racism and domestic violence.
I threw myself and put all my physical strength into trying to stop him. And I couldn't.
In Helsinki, they were saying, I can't believe you've made this film. It's incredible because it's showing what life is like for us now.
A series of special interviews with Linda Bassett, Leslie Nichol and Chris Bisson.
It was a great script and it was a timely thing to tell because it hadn't been told before.
They've done all sorts of incredible things to transport you back in time to give you an authentic feel of what it was like.
This series of special interviews is available now at distinctnostalgia.com.
Our series on comedy writing legends continues as we meet the man behind Britain's favourite grump.
I was always very concerned that however outrageous and seemingly incredible the plot lines I came up with were, that the key to making them sort of palatable was for the characters to react in a believable way. And so that's really why Victor ended up saying that all the time, was because that he couldn't believe it either.
We've been sitting down for a bumper chat with one of Britain's most talented writers and the man who created the legendary character Victor Meldrew in the now iconic sitcom One Foot in the Grave.
My dad had taken early retirement, so that seemed to be a device that I felt I could use to my advantage. I mean, it was really about someone with a lot of time on their hands who was just very disgruntled with life around him, and you know, so I could kind of use it as a bit of a vehicle for my own complaints and moans about litter in particular.
Comedy writing legends in conversation with David Renwick. Listen now at distinctnostalgia.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, we've an extra One Foot in the Grave treat. Scroll our feed to find an interview with the wonderful Doreen Mantle, who played Mrs. Warboys. Go to distinctnostalgia.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If nobody was told what you were meant to do, if there weren't any rules, we would be living in a totally different format.
A brand new podcast featuring rarely heard voices from across the UK and around the world.
Bisexuality is not really understood because people have biphobic tendencies.
And the second you mention bisexual, just their ears pick up.
Contemporary conversations around bisexuality.
Oh, well, you're still confused, right? No, I'm not confused.
We are questioned so much more than people when they come out as straight or gay.
It's intense pressure of like, am I sure? You're literally like monitoring yourself.
Every episode will include a very personal story as we try to paint a real picture of bisexual Britain.
This is Bisexual Brunch, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
So, obviously, you became Olive. Everyone thought of you as Olive. And there's still people today who will always see you as Olive.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But in more recent years, of course, you've become known as Aunt Sal in EastEnders.
Yeah.
How did that part come about?
Just a phone call to my agent, which he'd come along and read for this. And I sort of rang Barbara and said, who am I against? And she said, oh, so. But I think the real thing is they realised that I was going to be older than Barbara in EastEnders. And because Barbara was such a big star, they actually thought I would be the only one who wouldn't be frightened of her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I went, don't you say anything about me. And she said, no, I won't.
Aunt Sal was an interesting character because, she could be, I mean, she's very, very different to Olive. She could she could be caustic, couldn't she? She really could.
Oh, yes. She was lovely after Olive. Because the person I based Olive on, I based on Sal on that girl's mother.
Really, really. That's interesting. So basically, the matriarchal mother had had that effect on the daughter, had she? Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Aunt Sal then and some of the... So, I mean, she was in it occasionally, wasn't she? But she always turned up at moments where there was some big thing happening, wasn't it? And she was able to throw in a few hand grenades and whatever. Yes. Tell us about your love of playing Aunt Sal.
Oh, I thought she was wonderful because she had no scruples at all. She would say, you're not wearing that, are you? You look terrible. You know, and things like this. And when Barbara and I had to have a big punch-up row once, And I remember I started it and we went through the whole scene. And the director said, I'm not going to retake it. It's perfect. And the two girls, Ronnie and Roxy, you know, both said, we really believed you were sisters because we were quite capable of having a good stand-up row.
Really?
She's my best friend, Barbara, you know, so, I mean, we were quite capable of having a row. And it was fun. It was fun. And also, everyone was very, very kind to me when I went there, you know. Ross Kemp sort of said, I came in and handed my suitcase to him and went on. And he said to the director, did you see that? And the director said, no, I was on air. He said, well, watch what she's doing. And they were terrific, both him and Steve McFadden and Ross Kemp were great to work with.
Yeah, yeah. And she was in it for a long time, on and off, wasn't she? Many, many years, really.
Yes.
Where?
About 13 years, on and off.
Where is she supposed to be now, Aunt Sal? Do we know?
She lived in Stevenage.
Right, okay. So she could still pop in at some point.
Yes, she could still pop in, but Peggy's not there anymore.
Of course. And... I mean, what reaction did you get from people to Aunt Sal as a character?
Well, just someone like, you're Aunt Sal now, but you'll always be Olive.
Yeah.
it's so funny.
It is funny. But it is nice. I did like the fact that her causticness. It was great to have that kind of character who could just say
she
what
was
they
really
think.
Bitchy, wasn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah. But I think the point is that people, women get to a certain age sometimes. I mean, it sounds sexist to say that, but people generally get to a certain age and actually they just say what they want, don't they? Just say what they want, basically.
Yes, they do. I'm reaching that age at the moment.
my partner's grandma is well into her 90s. And yeah. She's lovely, but she gets away with so much because, you know, she's sort of 90-odd.
You're a bit older and you couldn't do it when you were younger.
No, exactly.
All the things you put up with when you're young of people telling you not to do this and not to do that. And when you get to an age where you think, no, sod it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Anna, it's been lovely to talk to you about both Olive and, of course, Aunt Sal. When you look back at both of those characters, obviously I know you've done lots of other ones as well over the years, but when you look back at those two characters, if you had to make a decision of which one you preferred, who would you go for?
I suppose it would have to be Olive.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose, yes.
Why, do you think?
Because she was around longer and so people got to know her better.
Yes. You were able to shape her better, weren't you, over time,
yeah,
I suppose?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because obviously Aunt Sal didn't become a regular fixture and fitting, as it were, kind of thing. It's been lovely to talk to you. Now, are you the last surviving member of the On the Buses cast now?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
I went to Stephen's funeral a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And that was the last.
I mean, there are a few people who were bit parts or popped in every now and again who are still around, aren't there, if I remember rightly?
Yes, they are.
But there aren't any of the main cast around anymore.
No, none of the main cast around at all. Michael first, and then Doris and Reg, and then Bob, and then Stephen.
And of course, Reg, though, lived to a very ripe old age, didn't he? He was
down in Torquay.
No, he did. He did really well. I looked something up the other day. I can't remember who it was now. I noticed that wasn't he the first person to use an ATM machine or something?
Yes, he was. I remember that.
Back in the... Was it the 60s sometime, wasn't it? I think, if I remember rightly.
Yes.
Yeah. They used him as the publicity, just trying to show people how to use an ATM machine back in that period. That was excellent. Did you get any extra things like that? Because you've been playing Olive, did you...
Yes, you do. You get invitations to, you know... sort of present the prizes of the thing which you get paid for.
Yeah.
And come and be a guest of honour here and you get invited to premieres and things. I mean, it's very sort of overpowering at the beginning.
Of course.
But it's nice.
On the Buses was done on stage as well, wasn't it, at one point? Is that right? You did it on stage,
We did it twice in Canada.
Yeah.
And we did... Bob and Stephen and I did summer seasons in Torquay and in Great Yarmouth. And Reg went to Australia. So I think we all sort of did it a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I know obviously you played in front of a studio audience when you were making them. But what was it like to do theatre, direct theatre on them?
Oh, I love direct theatre.
Yeah.
I really love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a lovely warm feeling. And when we went to Vancouver, I mean, that opening night was like, oh my God, you know, people were standing and cheering, and we were still thinking, oh, did we do it right, you know? But and of course Doris, you know, was the sweetheart of the Navy, and the whole Navy was in for the opening night.
Anna, it's been lovely to talk to you about your illustrious career, because you've had a fantastic time, really. Over this spanned a long time, hasn't it? Really, when you think about it, we're talking. You know, On the Buses started in 1969.
Don't ask me how old.
I'm not going to. Don't worry, I won't. I won't do that. You don't ask a lady how old she is. just the final question: do you think On the Buses could be done today?
They thought about it a little while ago, and it just couldn't work out. They wanted to have Reg in charge of his own bus depot, with me working in the office, and the person who gave him his license was Blakey, but it never happened. I don't know what happened about it.
So they were looking to thinking about doing a remake at some point.
Yeah.
But it's never the same, is it, when they bring things back in many ways?
No, it isn't. It isn't the same.
You know.
And it's silly to try to do it, because you can't do it as well as you did it the first time.
I know there's 70 odd episodes of On the Buses. I still don't think I've seen them all yet. I've seen quite a few of them, but I think there's a few that I've not managed to see, because they do keep getting repeated on a regular basis, actually.
Yes, they do.
which is good, and you've got to keep chasing those repeat fees. You must do that.
Do.
So yeah, lovely to talk to you. Nice to speak to you, Anna.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Anna Caron talking to Ashley during the height of lockdown last year. And our Funny Women series continues next time as I sit down for a chat with Judy Cornwell, who played Daisy in Keeping Up Appearances. Until then, bye for now.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM. And don't forget, you can find loads of great interviews, reunions, plus new drama and comedy at distinctnostalgia.com or wherever you like to get your podcasts.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.